Hey, this is John Bollinger with Premier Guitar. We are in Nashville, Tennessee at the Mercy Lounge. I'm with John Dietrich of the band Deerhoof. John, thanks for joining us, man.
Thank you. Thanks for coming.
My pleasure. Hey,
look. I guess you live here.
I do. I live here.
Okay, so it's easier for you.
Yeah, so thank you for coming to our little burg here. Tell me about, you're touring with one guitar, right?
Yeah. I mean, we travel in a minivan, so it's not really possible to bring more than one guitar. Yeah. So we have the four of us and our sound person. And so, I mean, basically, and to be honest, I'm not particularly precious about it, but this is probably my favorite instrument to play. It's just a melody maker from the 60s sometime.
Do you know what year it is, or how long
it's early 60s, I think. That's all I know. And I traded in, two guitars for it, basically, when I was living in Oakland. It's very light. Actually, that's my main thing, is it's extremely light. I have lower back issues.
Oh.
So it's wonderful to play a light instrument.
Right. Well, what a cool guitar. So the pickups, are those stock?
Are not stock. These are Lawler.
Oh.
So I replaced the whole pick guard.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, so they're P90, like stacked P90s or whatever.
Yeah, those are the Lawler. I've not played the Lawler, but I'm told those are the premier P90s.
Well, he was the only one that made a pickguard that they were stock and that fit into the, without having to do any routing in this particular instrument, so that's why.
Cool. Did they originally have covers on them, or they look...
I just put on whatever I had.
Okay.
So both my volume knobs are tone knobs, apparently.
Cool. Love it. Yeah, very cool. And how long have you had this?
I've had this for I don't know, maybe 10 years or something like that. Eight years.
Cool, man. Yeah, that looks like a really good old friend.
Yeah, it's just, it's light. And it's really fun to play.
Yeah, talk about neck access.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
nothing in your way. Well, that's easy enough. One guitar. So do you break strings? I mean, the videos I've seen of you guys, it's a very animated show.
Right.
And it looks like string breakage.
Right.
Probably happens.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it used to be way more of a problem. I used to always use super heavy picks.
Yeah.
And so I would routinely, break a lot of strings. But lately it's been pretty good. I mean, maybe once a tour or something. But generally speaking, I moved to a lighter pick, which I like the sound of more. So
yeah, once a tour, that's not bad. I saw some videos of you and you were just flailing.
Right.
Cool. Beating that guitar like it owed you money.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it holds up.
Good. Yeah, totally. No, it's great.
What kind of strings do you use, by the way?
They're just 12s, whatever happened to show up. Yeah.
Are you in standard tuning?
Yeah.
Wow.
In fact, I want to go to 13s, but I think I might start to get the neck might bow on this because basically I just had it refretted, and I think it might start to freak out if I put heavier strings on it.
Right.
But
yeah.
But it feels great. I mean, it's extremely.
Wow, 12s in standard tuning, that's gotta feel almost like an acoustic, like a flat top almost.
You should, I mean, it doesn't. It's totally
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm not man enough to play that guitar, but I'm really impressed that you can. That's great, man. Yeah, well, very cool. Okay, so one fabulous guitar. Now let's talk about your pedal board.
Right. So my pedals change every tour. Basically, depending on, sometimes things will show up, or I'll borrow something from a friend.
Sure.
So one of the companies that I have stuff from is this small company based in Connecticut called Shu, and I have two of his. And the reason I bring that up now is because sometimes, for example, one of his pedals will show up, and it'll be like he has played around with another pedal based on comments that I made in passing.
Oh.
Like I was looking for something because on this tour I'm not using it, but Ed has one of these little quilter, 2 pound heads.
Right.
And which are great, but it's just a really different sound. I have an old solid state head that I love the sound of, and that it's very solid and, anyway, so trying to get a sort of a warmer sound or something, I have been experimenting with different things. So anyway, when I got back from the last tour, there was a thing in the mail from this guy.
Cool.
This is an always on pedal, see what it's like.
And cool.
So that's worked its way in.
Well, that's great. So what's it called?
So this is called a savior machine, and it's kind of like a, it's just basically like a, basically I have three game pedals of different kinds. So the first one I have in the chain is a Fairfield, which is a company out of, I think, somewhere in Quebec.
Oh, really?
And they're super solid and incredibly nice pedals. And then the other two are the shoe ones. And I think this is basically a sort of hyped up version of the Savior machine, but he did a collaboration with DOD.
Cool.
And this has way more high end, basically.
Can we get a taste test of
all
these?
Yeah. So I mean,
I'm gonna plug my ear because
I won't be brutal.
No, go for it.
No,
man.
But I'm not going to. So like, you know, right?
Yeah.
So you have. So even just this other game, I mean, it's bright, but this gives you.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's what those do. And so.
And what about the first one? This guy.
Oh yeah. So this is a more mid-rangey, almost like a Tube Screamer-ish kind of. It's more hi-fi sounding though.
Yeah,
and
cool.
He has various things you can do to it to like change the input, I think impedance or something, so it's more or less trebly.
Cool.
Because I was complaining with going into this, one of those amps, the Quilters, that it would get basically having not done a lot of this, you know, basically having it one of these preamp pedals at the end meant I'm used to basically smashing the front end of whatever it is I'm using.
Yeah.
And so I thought I could do that with a pedal, but it would get super fizzy.
Yeah.
As opposed to an amp, which can kind of deal with it. It's made to deal with it or whatever. And so I'll have like, you know, three gain pedals going into something all completely maxed out. You know what I mean? Try to get it sound like basically that all hell is breaking
loose,
you know?
Yeah, that it's going to blow up. Kind
right.
of thing.
But if you have that going into a preamp pedal at the end, they can have a hard time with it. So I haven't really experimented with this pedal in that position yet, but I'm going to,
cool.
just because this amp is heavy.
Yeah.
My amp is heavy. So so yeah. So
okay, so start with the Polytune, and then from there it goes to...
Which is new to me, but it's working okay. I discovered it does have a problem, which is that in any places that have grounding issues, it has a hard time tracking.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I've only had one show. It was like, for whatever reason, it wouldn't track.
Huh.
And it was a place that had like lots of grounding problems.
Well, it sounds like the boys in research and development have to give
right.
that a look. Yeah.
So then other than that, I'd have a delay pedal.
Hold on, what's this mystery thing right here?
Oh, that's okay. This is just an AB thing. So so that's going into this, which is a Bit Commander, which is basically an octave or like a bass synth.
Ooh.
And right now I have it going into the amp so you can hear it, but normally I just have it going DI.
Oh.
So I can go back and forth from you know, my guitar sound too. And you can, you know.
Oh, that's great.
And it doesn't track chords or anything, and it's kind of temperamental in certain ways, but we use it a lot.
Yeah.
And it's great. I mean, it's cool.
Yeah,
basically,
very cool.
It was a problem-solving thing because we had all this stuff where I was switching to bass on certain songs,
yeah.
and we would have to sort of organize our set list around that. And this was, I was looking for a solution to where we could just fluidly go from guitar song into bass song into, you know, or bass synth song and
yeah.
that kind of thing. So
that is really synthy sounding. It's very
yeah,
cool.
yeah. And the way I have it set isn't like, basically through the PA it's like super subs,
sure.
you know what I mean, like through the yeah. amp it sounds kind of like MIDI, you
yeah.
know, but yeah, through the PA it's very
oh yeah
subby,
it's
and
huge,
yeah,
cool. And then what is this mystery thing over here, the disaster
transport? It's a delay, basically. It has two different delays. One's like a modulated delay. So you can have like, that kind of thing.
Oh, that's great.
And then the other is basically another delay that also has a, I think it says reverb, but I think it's basically like a really short delay that they have So it's both a delay and a reverb kind of.
Cool.
Let's see. Yeah, anyway.
That's cool. So during the show, do you get down and twist knobs and
sometimes. I mean, I have it a basic setup, and then I play around. We do a lot of improvising.
Yeah.
So, you know, I sometimes will play. Yeah, just if I get inspired or Ed will do something or someone will do something and I'll just like get excited and play.
You know? Yeah, cool.
So
yeah, that's fun. Hey, let's that covers that. Let's hear your let's see what kind of amp you're running.
Okay.
Here.
So this is an amp I got like 20 some years ago. I got it used. I was living in Wisconsin and it's a stereo solid state amp called a Pierce, made by this guy John Pierce, and I don't know how many he made or how many years he made them for, but not very many in both cases.
Is that John Pierce that does the acoustic stuff?
Entirely possible.
Huh. Okay.
So yeah, there are these weird amps. I mean, they're not that weird. I think they're great sounding. It's small. It's extremely loud. It's two 100 watt channels that can be bridged into mono, like 200 watt mono.
So are you bridging them?
No. So I have it in stereo mode, just using one output, and I have a really high wattage speaker in there, just so that, because I've actually on the West Coast here, I just blew Ed's speaker because it wasn't rated high enough for I ran this in mono and blew it up. So
what speaker are you running in?
It's just like an EV, like PA speaker.
Oh,
it's
really?
Like a 300 watt, like, you know.
Yeah, cool. And who made the cabinet?
I have no idea. We got those, a friend of ours made amps for us. This guy, Dave Brokema, made these really great kind of AC-15 clones for us, and which were green, and so we got these to go with it. We just put speakers in them, so we had these kind of nice, you know.
Cool.
So anyway, the Pierce, it's just, it's great. It has a parametric mid, so you can have extreme control, like.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah, cool.
So it's just basically problem solving. So like a lot of, like when we're touring every day, good example, we played two nights ago in Indianapolis. I plug in exact same settings as the previous night. It sounds just insane. It's incredibly bright, just like, you know, and actually sounded great, but it was insane sounding.
Yeah.
You know, play the show. I mean, I did some tweaking, play the show, you know, unplug it. Next day, yesterday we played in Lexington, everything exactly the same, sounds completely different.
Wow.
So the rooms we're playing in, you know, it's just acoustically they're really different, and you have to be able to sort of respond to it. This thing also has, which basically you never ever see anymore, maybe you never saw it at all, but he has a presence on both of these channels that is, it's like a shelf that like, it goes up to 16K. So that's what you're boosting.
Oh,
is all these frequencies that basically guitar cabs or guitar speakers are not intended to reproduce.
Huh.
But you can sort of get it in there. Like depending on certain speakers, it makes no difference. You're just like changing it. It can't hang at all. But like, especially like a full frequency speaker should be able to, you know.
Oh, wow.
So
cool.
Basically we can get treble, like very high treble. And anyway, it's nice.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
It's really it's such an unusual rig. It's cool just how you like kind of stumble into your tone. You
right, know, through, right, right, right. Well, I mean, for us, a lot of it is just like, it has to be small. It has to be portable. And it has to be, we have to be able to adjust and quite quickly, you know what I mean? Like like we're switching out speakers at concerts or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, we have to have something that is just one thing that works really well that, at the very last minute, like, oh, okay. Like, no, I have to actually really change my sound for this one concert. You know what I mean? So yeah, that's, that's it.
Yeah, cool. And you've been doing this for, is it 22 years?
The band's been going for like 23 or something like that. I didn't join until like 17 years ago or something.
Well, mere 17 years ago. Yeah. That's great, man. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, hey, enjoy your never-ending tour.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Okay.
All right. Hey, I'm with Ed Rodriguez of Deerhoof. Ed, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for inviting us.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, man, let's start with this fabulous guitar.
Okay. This is our own signature guitar from Eastwood. We met Mike from Eastwood about 7 or 8 years ago when we were doing the All Tomorrow's Parties Festival in New York. We finished our set and he was right up against the stage, like losing his mind.
Yeah.
And I had actually, at the time, I had never heard of Eastwood. And he was like, gave me a sticker and he was saying how much he loved it. And then he walked around and I bumped into him a little bit later in the festival and we talked a little bit. And we got to the, John and I, we always share a hotel room, and we got to the room, and we're like, oh, let's look at this. And we started looking at his guitars, and we were like, how have I missed this?
Right.
Because his stuff's incredible, yeah.
Yeah.
And so I immediately ordered one of the tuxedos, and I ended up playing that for like 5 or 6 years. I completely loved it. And when the record before this one came out, I always try and like match my guitars and my outfits and like all that thing.
Cool.
So for the last record, I made like a black outfit with like pink, neon pink on it.
Yeah,
so then
I
ended up make like just sort of from parts building my own like all pink guitar with like a pink fretboard and everything. And I was using it, and then on the tour I got an email from Mike and he's like, oh, I saw you're not using our Eastwood anymore. I wish you would.
He's like,
it's kind of sad that you're not using it. And it's like, how would you be? Would you guys be interested in doing like a Deerhoof like signature model? And we were like, oh, yeah. Of course. And from looking at his all of his guitars over the years, I had seen their EEB bass, which was like a tribute to the '60s Ampeg AEB bass. And I, which, if you've ever seen them, they're enormous. The body is just like this beast, and it's got like a scrolled headstock, and it's just huge. But I always thought it was like just really badass looking. So I asked him if he thought he could make a guitar version of it, and he completely loved the idea. So, which is this, with the fake F-holes and everything. So at that point, the model that that he made actually has a black pickguard, but I made this pickguard to match my outfit.
Yeah.
So you can, if you see up close, it doesn't look very good, but from like with most stage stuff, as you know, it's as long as it looks good from like 15 feet away.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's fine. But so it's I wanted the same pickups that were in the tuxedo. So these are stacked P90s.
Cool.
We had them at the sort of reverse angle in order to try and tighten up the bass end.
Right. I like. Yeah. I think it's just a better way to go.
Yeah. Yeah. It's rare. It's weird. Like how few builders have done that.
I'm told that Fender, like they began doing that because they were like, I think Leo had like lap steel pickups left over. They were too long, and so they said, well, I'll tilt it.
Yeah.
And I think he tilted it the wrong
way. That's sort of, and then there's also the thing of like Hendrix, who was like, you know, everything to me was part of his sound because the flipped version would get the angle this way instead of the other way.
Yeah.
So, totally. Our problem is always trying to, you know, trying to get like an intensity without like moving into that sort of shrill guitar zone. I think like it's, you know, it's very common to try and cut through with like more high end, you know, like just like get that real brittle. So with this back, this makes the highs a little bit more tapered, like less like ice picky, and then tightens up the bass. Cause that's always a problem I have too, is you know, we do a lot of fly-in shows, and when you show up with like a festival backline, it's you know we always bring our own heads, but 9 times out of 10 it's like a Marshall 412, which is like completely the bassiest, and a Vox AC30, which is also a different problem. But you know, but part of that was also we addressed with the wiring of this, where we have like a normal tone knob and then another one that rolls off the bass. Which really makes a huge difference, and Like on some amps, if you're just in a room, it's really subtle. Like, you know, it just sort of. But like touring and playing different rooms, I was really surprised. Like when we play like right when the tour started, we were practicing in a basement that was all concrete, and I had to have the bass completely up in order to get any beefiness.
Right.
And the first show we played, immediately I had to like roll all the bass because the room was completely boomy and stuff. Huh. And it really responds, like with pedals is like more where it's like.
That's cool.
And
so you pitched that at the Eastwood guys, and they said, "Yeah, let's do it."
Yeah, actually, I had seen like a wiring demo at Seymour Duncan like years ago, and I had always thought it sounded really good, and I had wanted to try it on a guitar. And then when we travel, we're in a minivan. We also, when we fly, we never pay for like extra bags.
Yeah.
So it's really important for us to keep everything as small as possible. So for flying shows, I was bringing like EQ pedals and things, and then we were just like had this fantasy of having like something that we would have a little bit more control, and maybe we could drop one pedal and have like wait to bring like 10 more CDs or something.
Right.
And then it also has a push pull on this for on the regular tone to split the either just like single coil or humbucker, and then a phase switch for the other. So it's like we were trying to get a good amount of like tonal possibility without having like 10 million like mini switches.
Right. I mean, for three knobs, it's amazing how many. Hey, let's hear the out of phase.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I want to hear that. Oh, cool. Cool, very quacky.
Yeah,
that's
so
cool.
So we really love that sound for.
It's cool.
Yeah.
So what's the scale like? Is it Fendery or Gibson-y?
It's Gibson. John and I both play Gibson. Like for the majority of our lives, we both played Gibson. So we wanted to do the Gibson scale on it.
Keeping that family. Cool.
Yeah, and I was the tuners are the same style as the original Ampeg bass where they had them back like that it actually feels like it keeps it in tune better. It could just be this model or something. This is the prototype, so this is the only it's the first guitar I've had where I tune it up and get it to get pitch, and then it just stays there.
Oh wow, that's good.
Yeah, so I with every guitar I've had, I've sat there and had to do the stretching forever, and this one I just get it there and it's like, it's there. So
how cool that you've got a signature guitar you really like.
Oh yeah, that's great. And plus, we do fly a lot, and like the last guitar that I put together, I had the classic thing of like opening the guitar case and like the neck joint snapped and everything. Yeah. And there is something, there's something really. So that's such a relief knowing that if I open the case, I can go, I'll call it Mike.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm sure everyone's experienced.
Yeah.
Just like that anxiety of like having to like just watching the guitar get taken away by
see them chuck.
We've talked about that a lot where we're like on the plane and you have that horror like where you're looking out the window and you see them like loading stuff and you see your guitar just
disgruntled guys throwing it. A lot of anxiety there, but that's great, man. Is that a bolt-on neck or is it
it's a bolt-on.
Cool. It's probably unbreakable.
Yeah, it's pretty. Probably. It's pretty simple, But I tend to like things simple, I've always been like, if I get someplace and I just have to use somebody else's guitar, I have to use somebody else's amp or something. It's like it might be like, oh, that sucks, but it's like okay.
Yeah.
So this is pretty much like a guitar. Like it's like it's not crazy or anything, but it's
It's very cool, man. It's there's a lot of signature guitars that are basically just well, it's a Tele or it's a Les Paul.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's astounding. Like, yeah. Like, especially when you start looking back at like vintage guitars and like during the time periods where they were just like didn't really, it hadn't settled yet, and they were just making whatever. And you're like, you're like, oh my God, there were all these, like, why didn't this catch on? Why didn't this catch on? Or like this is a 60s a 60s body design. It's like.
Yeah, it was a very creative time. People were let's make them look like spaceships.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Yeah. Even if only 20 people buy it.
Yeah, yeah. I love that. Well, very cool. Congratulations. That's huge,
thank you.
Man.
Thank,
Okay, well, let's talk about your very humble pedal board.
Yeah.
Now, I imagined, I mean, I thought you were going to have, because everything I've seen of you guys, you have like, you have lots of weird noises.
Yeah.
And I imagine a huge pedal board full of weird noise making things.
Like a big part of our philosophy is like doing the most with like whatever you have, like with very little. And it's a really, really common misconception that we have these like gigantic pedal boards. And we meet a lot of pedal makers, and they'll come to shows and they'll give us a pedal, and they always bring like their weirdest pedal. Like they're like this is, you know, you hit this and like it makes siren noises and like these, you know, thunder happens and all this, and it's crazy. And and this ties in with our thing of like traveling in a minivan, not paying for extra. We just need everything to be like as completely functional, have a bunch of possibilities. And like we don't have room on our pedal board to bring like one pedal just to like hit for one song, which is, I think, is like, you know, common. It's cool, but it's just like it's not the route that we decided to go. So we're more about like real minimal pedals, like knowing everything it can do. And what, like for John and I, it's like pedal demos are usually useless because it's like we'll never do with a pedal like whatever that person is doing. Because a big part of what we do too is like feeding pedals into each other, like the wrong, like with John's setup, he has like three or four just overdrive pedals.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of that stuff comes from, is like hitting, like smashing a pedal way too hard, like that it's not supposed to get hit that hard, and just doing like what you're not supposed to do with these things in order to get something else out of it.
Yeah.
You know, so like the pedals are kind of an extension of the guitar for us, where it's like, We find a lot of inspiration. We generally use just very musical pedals that are also like inspiring to us. So, and we will switch our setups very often, like for every tour, just because that changes the experience too of the tour. Like where you're like, oh, I can do this, and it's like like all this new stuff will happen in the music, and the music keeps changing for us on tour. So my pedal setup is kind of. You know, John and I have been playing together in different bands and like just since we were like 19 years old.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
So over time, we've kind of developed from listening to recordings of us playing together. We've really come to understand like what we shouldn't do, you know, which is like what we should do. That's still like up in the air. That could be, but like what we shouldn't do is like really clear, because, you know, we're both like complete guitar nerd, you know, so it like really often it's like, you know, you get into that like just million miles away wankery and sort of thing, and then you're like, oh, this is the greatest thing we've ever done, this is amazing, this is, everyone's in heaven, and then you listen to the recording, you're like, oh my God, this is like the worst noodly mess ever, like we're both like cringing. And so so because of that, we know like we definitely have a like sort of punch and jab sort of like you know, choose your moment sort of sort of approach to everything. And my pedal board in a way is a response to his pedal board, to like stay out of his way.
Sure.
You know, so I tend to will grab things out of my drawer that are different than what he has. And also that is a big part of how we arrange the music, where it's like on a record, we may have our parts, and then when we go live, we'll switch our parts because, oh, you have a delay pedal, and this time I'm using a reverb, and it sounds better with a delay, so you do this. Or we'll be like halfway through, like into a tour, and be like, oh, I can't hear when we're playing this part, this melody is getting buried. Well, John can get more gain from this, so we'll switch the melody to his guitar and do that. So it's we're constantly like changing stuff on tour to just have things be clearer.
Yeah.
And then that's also a part of the pedals, is like we're noisy, but like we do a lot of stuff where it'll be like, you know, John and I will be playing like two small like 3-note chords to build like a big 6-note chord.
Sure.
And if one or two of those notes isn't heard, then that chord kind of like disappears.
Yeah.
So we do stuff. So a lot of it is. I've had to tell like people that have given me pedals is, I'm sorry, you can't hear the notes. You can't hear like, and we're incredibly note based, which is like a lot of like. Like it's very easy to miss that because there's a lot of stuff going on, but it's like, yeah, it's really important that everything is clear, that all the notes are there, that it's still powerful. We have a wide range of like tonal possibilities, and it's still like there's room for improvising.
That's cool. It's cool, that whole symbiotic thing that some guitar teams have, like Mick and Keith. They always
completely.
Yeah, I mean, like one's hanging out and one's doing his thing.
Yeah,
I love that.
Totally. I mean, there was the quote that they had where it's like that it's like you know, separately there's a million guitarists that are better than them, but like together they're better than
anybody. Yeah,
they're better than anybody.
Yeah, sorry I said Mick, but yeah, Keith and Ronnie, it is amazing.
Completely. It's that kind of thing. Like we're definitely. I don't think we were. You know, it was definitely a process because we're both having grown up together, playing together for so many years. Our styles kind of grew very similar, and it did take a while for us to figure out like how to have them separate enough where it was like we could come together, but we could also be distinguished. Like our sound person Darren is saying, like as the years go on, it's like he used to be like. Who's who, you know, like when he's mixing, like he had trouble figuring out who was who.
Right.
But now he says, as time's going on, he can tell, like, oh.
Oh. Yeah.
You know, Ed does this, John does that.
Yeah.
You know, like
cool.
we're starting to like still have it be like one big guitar, but still, you know, have different things happening.
Yeah. So cool. Well, take us through this. Let's hear this madness.
Oh, okay.
What you're starting with? You plug into your tuner. You're starting on.
Oh
this
yeah,
side.
Yeah. I have been over the years. I've been using many different pedals. The last tour, I was using also a shoe pedal from John, like from the same company, and then a Mantic conceptual Proverb reverb, which I thought were amazing. Recently, I live in Portland, Oregon, and I happen to meet like the people from Catalan Bread, who are based in Portland.
Cool
and in
company.
Like, and in like, yeah, and in like true Portland style, I was like, oh, locally sourced pedals, you
yeah.
know, like they're right down the street.
Yeah.
So I went over to them and met everybody, and they're like, everybody is like amazing, and they're just like this family, like building pedals, you know.
That's great.
So I like immediately fell in like just for everything that they did, and so. Now my pedal board is all their pedals.
Oh, cool! Well, let's hear it. So, where are you starting with here?
Starting off is their Naga Viper, which is like their sort of Rangemaster clone. So I like that's me without it, and then
cool.
So this comes in really handy for like. This was a real problem-solving thing for a lot of the one-off shows because. Like I was saying, a lot of times we get the really bassy cabinets, and where the bridge pickup sounds great, but then you go to the neck pickup and it's complete mud.
Sure.
So like this, like even if it is just, it immediately like brings like cuts through and like that's you know.
Yeah, sounds great.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
And then after that, like so that I use more for just you know standard distortion like. And then more often I use the Octavia, their Octopussy Octavia. I was using the Frog Octavia for a while, but then I thought I'd give this one a go.
Is that this guy?
Yeah, the middle one. So that's just like. So like most of my chordal stuff is with that because they actually track.
That's great.
Yeah, and it's different enough from it. Sort of like moves my guitar with like stuff into a slightly different range than John because he doesn't use anything that really like adds any upper.
Well, it's funny that octave, like most octave pedals, the bottom end is so overwhelming. But that's kind of subtle. It just sounds like a big. It's almost like a harmonic. It kind of hints at something going down.
Yeah, definitely. That's like
cool.
Like I said, I pretty much. really use it for chords, which is like
cool.
Which is that's when it comes. Yeah, that's it really cuts through. And then after I had been using the Mantic Proverb, which is like an amazing, really beautiful sounding reverb. Really like it's really like live sounding. But for this, just for a change of pace, I switched to their this Bell Epic, like which is more of like more of an echo tape. Echo.
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. So that's nice. And then you know you have all your standard like you can do all the layering and all this sort of thing. And their stuff is incredibly musical, where it's like it really you can really tell with like the octave, like with what you feed into it, like the volume. You know, all their stuff responds really well to volume, and we're completely like dynamic bass. So so we'll like drop down to nothing, and it's really nice to and inspiring to, like that when we do go down to different ranges, it's like different things happen.
Yeah, so. Right. Yeah, it's funny because some bands are. I mean, there's no dynamics.
Yeah.
Just like. You know, start on 10 and end on 10.
Yeah, it's a lot of people don't like get how much louder 10 sounds after you've been at like 0.5 for
a while.
But and then I go into just a standard Boss tuner, and I use the Boss because like most of our. We're really conscious of like problem solving because we've had like our tours are incredibly boring and uneventful because tours are generally exciting because stuff goes wrong. Like everyone's great tour stories are, and then this blew up and then this fell off and collapsed on the, you know, like, but we've so that's like a part of that where it's like, I use the like, you know, kiosk, Kiox or whatever.
Oh,
I can't remember what.
I've never even seen one of those.
This is one of those nano boards, and they're making the power supplies that actually fit.
Cool.
That fit under them, and plus they run for European power.
Oh,
and they switch
cool.
from 9 volts to 18 volts.
Oh,
so
great.
All of the Catalin Bread pedals can run at 18 volts. So and it brings out a completely different characteristic in the pedals. So I have And I also picked that power thing because it has a fuse, you can reach the fuse and take it out and just do a fuse replacement for those few times that you plug in Europe without remembering to switch the power thing, which we, you know, still do.
It happens.
And but I use the Boss because if something goes wrong with that power supply, then I can just daisy chain off the Boss and run the pedals. So it's just another thing that part of like trying to have stuff that can. You know, be very flexible and help us out.
Right, bulletproof.
Yeah.
Oh, and speaking of flexible, you're traveling with that Quilter amp, right?
Yeah.
The tiny, which is great. So do you carry that with you on fly dates as well?
Yeah, definitely. It's so if we need to, I can put everything in a backpack, like all my pedals and everything in the backpack. This is actually even the first tour that I got a pedal board. I had been using like a piece of wood for like the past like 20 years, like this, just a piece of wood with Velcro on it. And then I was like, I'm gonna go pro this time. And I got this thing, and it was like, The Quilter, it's the 101 head, and it's a 50 watt solid state, weighs 2 pounds, and
that's amazing.
I know, and
sounds great.
Yeah, I think it sounds great. Our sound person loves it. It's he thinks it works completely great with John's sound, and I for years, like I'm sure a lot of people do. I had that battle between like solid state and tube stuff. And before this, I had been using like the Orange Tiny Terror forever, which I really loved.
Cool.
I would have to have like everything tightened up because just even like carrying it with me on the plane, everything would loosen up. Plus everything's wired directly to the board. So I'd have it multiple times where like the knobs would snap off of the off of the board, and I'd be like soldering like behind a thing trying to do that. And it sounds incredible, but this like that the Quilter is 2 pounds, sounds great, and I'm really happy with it.
That's great. And what kind of cabinet are you running into?
Kind of use whatever. We have different setups across. Like none of us live in the same city anymore, so the band is thought of as from San Francisco.
Yeah.
When everyone moved, I moved to Portland, so I got like the original deer hoof gear. So we have a backline there.
Oh, cool.
And then some people moved to New York, and so we have a backline there. And John, who lives in, moved to Albuquerque, and all of this stuff is his, all of our.
Oh,
so,
really?
So like the drums are borrowed from a friend of his. This is his cabinet, which is a Mesa Boogie single 12. We always we always play single 12s when we're traveling because we are in the minivan. Normally, like at home, the one I mainly use is a Polytone single 12.
Oh, that yeah, has it. Yeah,
yeah, it's it was like the Mini Brute extension. Yeah. With except I replaced. John and I had another like mind-blowing experience where we took every cabinet we had and every speaker that we had owned and sat and swapped them out and tried it, and then you know. It was just one more thing added to the list of like, I don't know what's going on, you know, like where it's like, oh great, so seeing how much that matters, like what speaker and what cabinet, like how it just completely changed. And I ended up with a 75 watt Carvin in a Polytone closed back like single 12. It sounds amazing.
Yeah. That is such a guitar player thing. It's like I'm gonna take every amp and every cabinet and I'm gonna spend all
we borrowed cabs too, like we borrowed like open back to see if there was something else we should get or something.
I think it's shit like that why I'm twice divorced.
I mean nobody else understands. It's like this one is different than that one, I swear to God. It's like that's why I was like, oh God, I have like five Octavias. I really should gotta like.
Yeah. I can't do this. get it. Yeah, I spent I'll go for marathon.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, to someone who hasn't actually like subjected themselves to this lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they don't like. It's really like hard to understand.
I know,
this
man.
Thing. And in a way, they're probably right. Like, like, why is that thing with six strings different than that thing with six strings?
It's civilians like, don't get it. It is totally a guitar geek thing.
Yeah.
Well, man, Ed, it's been great talking to you. Thanks so much.
Yeah.
Congratulations on that signature.
Oh, thanks
That's
so much.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
thank you.
Enjoy the never-ending tour, man.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks again.
Cheers. Till next time.
Don't forget to sign up for PG Perks, your all-access pass to exclusive gear giveaways and discounts on PremierGuitar.com.